Hello, boys and girls. Welcome back to Children's Storytime. We're back with You're a Bad Man, Mr. Gum. Mr. Gum's not really bad, but he is real weird. This is a funny story, quite strange at times, written by Andy Stanton. Chapter 3, Mr. Gum lays his plans like the horror he is. The next morning, Mr. Gum was in the butcher's shop. The butcher was a scrawny old man called Billy William III, and no one knew what the third bit meant. I reckon he was in prison when he was younger and his number was 3, said Jonathan Ripples. Maybe it's because he's the third nastiest person in town, said the little girl called Peter. Tell you what I think, said Martin Launderette, who ran the Launderette. When he was a young man, he was probably in prison and... Hey, said Jonathan Ripples, stop stealing my ideas. Shut up, said Martin Launderette. Why don't you go on a diet? Of course, Billy William III had his own theory. It's because I'm actually royalty, he would tell anyone foolish enough to listen. I'm third in line for the throne of England after their mother geezers. He always pronounced England in this way. Other words he said funny were hospital, fountain, and funny. Nobody believed Billy William III's story about being royalty, except for Billy William himself, and even he didn't believe it most of the time. But he enjoyed lying. It made him laugh. Not a nice laugh like you and I would do, but a sneaky old laugh on the inside where nobody else could see. Anyway, forget it. The important thing is that Mr. Gum had gone to old B.W. III's butcher shop, which was called Billy William III's Right Raw Meats, to buy the biggest load of meat he could get his angry hands on. He had a plan. I've got a plan, he told Billy William. Next time that whopper dog comes a-playing on my lawn, well, he better watch out, that's all. My plan is the best. Are you going to be laying down all that meat and poisoning it so when that barking fatty eats it, he'll fall down dead? Guessed Billy William. Maybe I am, said Mr. Gum, a little annoyed that the butcher had guessed his plan so quickly. He had been looking forward to explaining it in detail and impressing Billy William with his cleverness and bad heart. Talking of bad heart, said the butcher, here's 3 pounds of it. It's been sitting out in the sun since last Tuesday. That ought to poison him, and no mistake, Mr. Gum, me old slipper. Why did you leave it sitting out in the sun? Said Mr. Gum, taking the horrible sloppy bag from the disgusting butcher. I like watching the flies go mad over it, laughed Billy William. They're funty. You see, that was how he pronounced the word funny. It's the funtiest sight in all of England. I laugh so hard I nearly had to go to the hop-a-pool. Well, thank you, me old gobbler, said Mr. Gum, handing over some money that Billy William would later discover to be made out of lies and broken promises. And with that, he left the shop. Out in the high street, Mr. Gum remembered he hadn't been nasty to anyone for over 10 minutes. He looked around for any children who might be playing or just walking or anything. Didn't really matter what they were doing. Even reading a book would be fine. Just some children he could be nasty to. But there were none to be seen, so he went and bought a newspaper. He opened it up at a photo of a 10-year-old boy who'd just won the World Record Cup reward for secret burping. This'll do nicely, said Mr. Gum, and he scowled at the photograph all the way home, hardly even looking where he was going. At one point he dripped over a stone, which made him feel like the burper was somehow beating him, but that only made him scowl harder than ever. So you see, I've won again, he said with a proud smile, which we quickly turned back into a scowl. Back home, Mr. Gum locked all the doors and windows, even the broken ones. Then he sat down to think on the old sailor's chest, where it stood in the front hall. It was a beautiful old thing made of mahogany, which is a type of wood called mahogany, and it was carved all over with amazing scenes of life at sea, with waves and whales and tall ships. Mr. Gum had owned the sailor's chest for over 40 years, but he had never once taken the time to appreciate its beauty. What's more, Mr. Gum had never once thought to open that beautiful chest and see what was inside. Had he done so, it might have been a very different story indeed. It might have been Mr. Gum's chocolatey adventure, because I'll tell you something. That old chest had once belonged to a sailor called Nat Surname, the hero of the high seas. One Tuesday long ago, he had saved a Spanish village from being destroyed by a terrible pirate called Kevin. As a prize, the village presented Nat with a chest, which was absolutely stuffed full of chocolate. Not just any old chocolate, mind you, but a special chocolate made by the dolphins of the region. And it might just be legend, but some said it was magic chocolate with fantastic powers, and they always whispered when they said it. How the chest ended up in Mr. Gum's house, nobody knows, but there it had stood for over 40 years, unloved and unopened. As a result, Mr. Gum had never discovered Nat's sugary treasure, which just goes to prove that angry people always miss out on their rewards. They are so busy sniping and griping that they never see the good things around them. So it was that Mr. Gum found himself sitting on a sailor's fortune of what may have been magic chocolate, in terrible ignorance, hatching evil. How do I know these cow hearts are going to be rotten enough? He asked himself presently. I'd better try eating one myself. If it kills me, then I'll know it's rotten enough to use on that big woofer. He took out a cow's heart and opened his mouth wide. This is one of the craftiest things I've ever done, he chuckled, raising the smelly, greenish-red meat to his lips. I am a very clever man. Mr. Gum was just about to take a bite when he realised this might not be such a clever idea after all. He put the heart back into the bag and thoughtfully scratched his beard. Not the beard that grew on his chin, but a spare one that grew on the wall that he used for scratching at from time to time. In the end, he decided to soak the rotten hearts in rat poison just to be sure. It can't fail, he cackled. Old Dogger is in for a surprise he won't like at all. Chapter 4. Mr. Gum has a cup of tea. Mr. Gum had a cup of tea. Chapter 5. The next morning, Mr. Gum inspected the cowhards. They had been soaking all night in rat poison, and they were good and proper dangerous to dogs now, and gave off a foul smell even worse than before. That blibbering dog be smelling this bad smell, and with the animal instincts of animals, he'll refuse to eat him, thought the crafty old man. I'd better disguise the smell with something nice. Mr. Gum looked through his kitchen cupboards, but was there anything nice in there? Of course there wasn't. All he could find was a rotten turnip, a dried-up mushroom, and a sock full of stale crisps. So off he headed into town. He was in a filthy mood, and as he walked along, he muttered to himself. Shabby whiskers, he muttered. Who'd have thought poisoning that stupid whopper dog could be such hard work? What a bother it all is. There was a little girl playing in the hedge as Mr. Gum walked by, and she heard what he said and grew alarmed. What's old Mr. Gum up to now with talk of poisoning whopper dogs? Said the little girl to herself. What whopper dog can he mean? She ran through a list of all the whopper dogs that she knew. Didn't take long because she only knew one. Jake, that big, lovable, golden old hound. No, she cried, no, I won't let it happen. Oh, I loves that dog. Watch out, because it's true. I loves him, and what's more, that dog saved my life once, and now I'm not going to stand by playing in a hedge while that old grizzler flippin' poisons him to death and destruction. No way, says I. I'll stop him. That's what I'll do. Now, this little girl's name was Jammy Grammy Lammy Fupper Fupper Berlin Stereo EEO Leap Creep Mnemonica Lestrapec De Crispin, De Crispin, De Cespin, De Fespin, De Whoop De Loop, De Bunkle, Merry Christmas, Lenoir. But her friends just called her Polly. You will have to make up your mind now whether or not you are her friend. If you are, then you can call her Polly too. But if you are not, then every time you see the name Polly in the story, in your head, you will have to say, Jammy Grammy Lammy, Fapa Fapa, Berlin Stereo, E.O., Lip Zip Mnemonica, Lestrapec, De Crispin, De Crispin, De Cespin, De Vespin, De Whoop De Loop, De Brunkle, Merry Christmas, Lenoir. Instead. For instance, she's about to go running down a hill like this. Polly went racing down the hill like a runaway marble. Now, if you're her friend, then don't worry about it. But if you're not her friend, you will have to read it like this. Jammy, Grammy, Lammy, Fuppa, Fuppa, Berlin, Stereo, Eo, Eo, Lip, Zip, Mnemonica, Lestrapec, De Crispin, De Crispin, De Spespin, De Vespin, De Whoop De Loop, De Brunkle, Merry Christmas, Lenoir. Went racing down the hill like a runaway marble. Most people in the Monarch Bibber chose to be Polly's friend for the sake of time and convenience. Luckily, though, Polly was a girl worth liking. She was 9 years old, with lovely sandy hair like a cat's daydream, and a smile as happy as the Bank of England. And when she laughed, the sunlight went splashing off her pretty teeth like diamonds in search of adventure. So Polly went racing down the hill like a runaway marble, determined to find Jake the dog before he fell victim to Mr. Gum's evil scheme. She didn't know exactly what the old man had in mind, but she knew her big friend was in trouble. She ran past the old curiosity shop and then ran back inside because she was curious to see what was inside. Then she remembered the danger Jake was in and continued on her way. She ran past a dustbin filled with rubbish, and then another one filled with rubbish, and then another one filled with rubbish, and then another one filled with princesses. There was something unusual about one of those dustbins, she had time to think. But she had to keep on running. She ran past big trees, tiny little trees, and tiny, tiny little trees. So small, they were more like pebbles. In fact, they were pebbles. She ran past a cat's ears, which were lying on the pavement, and a cat's nose and whiskers, which were lying on the pavement, and a cat's body and tail and legs and eyes and claws, which were lying on the pavement. In fact, it was all just one cat lying on the pavement. She ran like the wind and then got tired and just walked like a breeze. But she soon sped up again because she was determined to save that tremendous dog. It was only after she'd been running for about half an hour that she remembered something quite important. She had absolutely no idea where Jake lived. And what's more, she was no longer in Lamonic Bibber. She had come to the woods on the edge of town, and they were big and scary and full of shadows. The ancient trees looked down from on high, stern and forbidding. We are the trees, they seemed to whisper. You are not welcome in this place. We are the trees. A cold wind blew, making Polly shiver, and she was certain one of the flowers was snarling at her. Oh no, she cried, sitting down on one of those massive toadstools you sometimes get in spooky woods. I don't know where I am, and that old Jake's facing the biggest challenge of his doggy life, and I doesn't know where's to find him, and that flower's probably gonna eat me. And with that, she burst into tears. Just then, an old man peered out the window of a secret cottage, half hidden in the bushes behind her. Polly hadn't noticed the cottage, and I'm sure you wouldn't have either. That's the thing about secret cottages. They're secret. Well, 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 said the old man. What have we here? A little girl in trouble? And here this chapter ends, leaving you to wonder if the old man was Mr. Gum or if it was a different old man who was going to be nasty to Polly and laugh at her and stuff. Or maybe he was a good man. Yes, this chapter ends here with me not telling you that Polly was sitting outside the cottage of Friday O'Leary, a fantastic old fellow who knew the mysteries of time and space and things of that nature, and with me not telling you that he is one of the heroes of this tale. Ha ha, I am keeping that information to myself, and you will have to wait till chapter 7 to find it out. That is what is known as suspense. Chapter 6. Mr. Gum lays down his hearts. Meanwhile, Mr. Gum was a mumbling and a grumbling his way into town. He made his way past Billy William III's Right Raw Meats, and while he was tempted to go in, he knew that it would be a waste of time. He would never find anything nice smelling in Billy William's butcher shop. That was one of the reasons Mr. Gum liked him, because he was a stinker. There were no customers with Billy William at that hour, and Mr. Gum could see him through the dirty window. He was playing a game of butcher's darts, which is exactly the same as normal darts, except that the board is a pig's head and the darts are all sheep's bones. Billy William had invented it one day when he was drunk. Mr. Gum loved butcher's darts, but there was no time to pop in and challenge Billy William to a match. He had more important fish to fry. Or rather, to poison. Or rather, dog, not fish. He had more important dog to poison. So he continued on and crossed over to Mrs. Lovely's wonderful land of sweets, which was a sweet shop at the other end of the road. As you might guess, Mr. Gum didn't enjoy going in there at all, because it was a wonderland of sweets and goodness, and Mr. Gum was a filthy old devil who hated good things like sweets and birthday parties and kittens dressed as clowns. He would much rather hear a piano being demolished by illegal bulldozers than a Mozart concerto. He didn't even like pop music, not even the Beatles. The only thing he liked about the Beatles was their name, because they sounded like insects, and you could spare people with insects. So he stepped into the sweet shop as cautiously as a paper hat in a storm. Immediately the air was full of marvellous scents. The powdery smell of sherbet lemons mingled with the odours of strawberry bombs and licorice whips. Mr. Gum felt sick. He felt as if he were being attacked by the forces of good. When he was a boy, he had loved eating sweets, but that was before he turned into a bad man. Yet now he seemed to hear the voice of the boy he had once been, calling to him down the years. Where did it go? All the good. Where, oh where? Turn again, turn again. You can be good again, I know it. There is still time. Turn again, Mr. Gum, said the voice in his head. He looked down and saw that the voice was not in his head after all, but belonged to a young boy who was standing next to him. Turn again, Mr. Gum, you can be good again, said the boy, offering him a fruit chew. For some strange reason, the boy's honest face frightened Mr. Gum more than anything else in that sweet shop. All this talk of turning again, he snarled, shoving the boy out of the door. I don't like it, I'll tell you. It makes me feel sick. At that moment, Mrs. Lovely came tumbling out of the back room with her kindly eyes and kindly nose and kindly ears. How can noses and ears be kindly? Wondered Mr. Gum, but it was true. Everything about Mrs. Lovely was kindly. She was even kindly to disgraces like Mr. Gum, and he could not bear this. It made him want to break down inside and cry all the bad things away. Hello, you old witch, he sneered. Give me some lemonade powder. Mrs. Lovely's eyes sparkled. Yes, 'tis a beautiful day, Mr. Gum. Yes, indeed. She smiled as she measured out a bag of lemonade powder. I don't know what's so lovely about it, you old menace, snarled Mr. Gum, handing over some potatoes he had painted to look like pound coins to save money. He was annoyed to see that as soon as the potatoes touched Mrs. Lovely's hands, they turned into real money. One of them turned into a jewel with a laughing face on it. "Shabby me whiskers," he growled, turning on his heel in disgust. "A pleasure to see you as always, Mr. Gum," beamed Mrs. Lovely as the old man stormed out with the little bag of lemonade powder clutched between his elbows. "I do hope you come again soon." Mr. Gum hardly noticed the walk home, mainly because he took a taxi. He couldn't wait to get his plan into action. Very soon he was back in his smelly kitchen. He rubbed his hands together gleefully and danced a cruel jig like a spiteful imp who'd snotted over all the presents on Christmas morning. He opened the little bag and sprinkled its contents over the rotten and poisoned cow hearts. Then he gave them a quick sniff. "Jibbers," he gasped, clutching his throat. "They smell of lemons and sunshine and friendship. I can hardly breathe." Holding it at arm's length, Mr. Gum took the plate of doom out into his very neat and tidy garden. He placed it right in the middle of the lawn where Jake was sure to see it. The day was very still. Not a single blade of grass was moving. Somewhere in the distance, a chicken barked. Mr. Gum settled back in his favourite broken chair and waited to see what would happen. Chapter 7, Friday, O'Leary. So, now we head back to Polly, who was just where we left her, having a good old cry outside the secret cottage. Who, though, is that old man watching her from the window? You've probably been going crazy from all the suspense, haven't you? Well, you can breathe a sigh of relief, because it is none other than Friday O'Leary, who is one of the heroes of the story. The next time somebody says to you, "I hate old men, all old men are unpleasant and wicked," don't be too quick to agree with them. Take a minute to think about this tale. All old men are unpleasant and wicked. That's nonsense, you will say. No, it's not, says this somebody whose name is Anthony. Mr. Gum's an old man, and he's a dreadful old shocker. That's true, Anthony, you say. And what about Billy William III, says Anthony smugly. He's as horrible as Brussels sprouts. Well, you've got me there, you say. But Anthony, you are forgetting about Friday O'Leary. He's an old man too, and he's an absolute winner. Oh, I am so stupid. I forgot about Friday O'Leary, says Anthony. I'm going away now to pay £200 to see a glass of water balanced on a horse's back. That is how stupid I am. And you will never be bothered by the likes of Anthony again. Just who was this O'Leary character anyway? Not a lot was known about him because he was a mysterious sort of a fellow, but I will tell you what I know based on rumours, half-truths and downright fibs. Friday O'Leary was as old as the hills and as wise as the hills, but not quite as tall as the hills. His bald head was covered in thick curly hair and he had the normal number of legs. He was the only person ever to have found a needle in a haystack, although to be fair it was a very large needle in a tiny haystack. His favourite number was green, and his favourite colour was 26. He sometimes got his numbers and colours mixed up, and he owned the world's smallest collection of stamps. None at all. Oh, and one last thing. Occasionally, for reasons known only to himself, Friday O'Leary shouted, "The truth is a lemon meringue," at the end of his sentences. Anyway, earlier that day, Friday had been sitting in his front room, playing the piano. He was playing a song he had written himself called He was playing a song he had written himself. All about how he was playing a song he had written himself. He had also written a song called But He Wasn't Playing That at the Moment. But he wasn't playing that at the moment. He had just come to the final lines when the telephone rang. Friday ran to get it, but he was too late, because it wasn't ringing in his cottage. It was ringing in Ethel Frompton's house, 100 miles away. It was her friend Mavis on the line. "Hello, Ethel," said Mavis. "How's things?" Back at the secret cottage, there came the sound of crying and sobbing and general unhappy little girl noises. Friday rushed to the window and uttered those famous, suspenseful words I mentioned before. "Well, well, well," he said. "What have we here? A little girl in trouble?" Then he opened the front door and stepped outside. "Hello," he said to Polly. "Are you all right?" "The truth is a lemon meringue." "Who are you?" asked Polly. She was a little bit nervous because her mother had told her never to talk to strangers. Her mother was full of this sort of advice. "Brush your teeth twice a day. Wash your hands before meals. Don't cut your legs off with a bread knife." But most of all, it was never talk to strangers, which was blimmin' good advice, especially with a stranger as strange as the stranger before her now. Goodness, things are totally weird in this story, aren't they? I do hope Polly can save Jake the dog and that he doesn't eat the disgusting meat. Next time we start Chapter 8, Strange Things Happen. Till then, happy reading. Goodbye.
This program is made with assistance from New Zealand On Air for radio broadcast and through the accessmedia.nz website. Thank you, New Zealand On Air.